Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem, welcome back to today's Daf, Baba Kama Daf Kufav. We are holding right on top of the Amar at the first line. V'ha'amar Ilfa, we begin with a Kasha. At the end of yesterday's Daf, Rav Sheshes tells us, HaKayfer B'Pikadam, if one denies having been entrusted with an item, so he was a Shomer, and he denies ever having gotten that item, that turns him into a gazlan, into a thief, and he is chayav bo'insin, which means that he's fully responsible for this item that he really has under his care. And even if an accident happens, he's responsible just like any ganav. So this simple, you know, verbal declaration, this denial, is sufficient to transform him from a friendly fellow, a trusted fellow, into a gazlan. Pretty rapid change of events, change of titles. So simply being kaifer b'pikadin, even without, you know, making a shvua and resorting to, you know, formal channels, kaifer b'pikadin turns into a gazlan. Asks the Gemara, really? Right on top. Va'amar Ilfa. Didn't Ilfa tell us shvua kaina? Only by making a shvua do you actually, you know, acquire. And the Gemara figures, he meant to say that by denying ever having given, ever having been given the item, and you add a shvua to the mix, I swear as such, only then do you turn into a gazlan. You have formally established yourself as a gazlan, in which case you now are fully responsible for that item under your care like any other ganav. Only shvua does that, but just a simple, you know, verbal denial doesn't. Answers the Gemara. So that's the kasha. Shvua kaina. Shvua hu de kanya. Apparently only a shvua can accomplish that. Kinyan. Aval kfir le kanya. But simply denying doesn't. Hachanami de kaima ba'agam. Oh. Says the Gemara, just like yesterday we discussed, you know, different situations and the difference between a fellow who denies being in possession of an item which is right here. So he has no excuse for denying. Versus, and that's the case of Rosh Hashanah. At that point, he turns into a gazlan because there's no alibi, there's no excuse for it, as opposed to a case where it's sitting out in the agam, in the swamp. It's an expression meaning it's not here, and, you know, he has to go find it until he fetches it. He wants to have some time. It's sort of like a delay tactic. Hachanami dekame ba'agam. Here as well, when Ilfa tells us that without a shvua, he doesn't really turn into a gazlan, that's because we're speaking that the item is not, you know, accessible, so he's just using it as a delay tactic, and we don't really hold it so much against him. He was saying another option to explain Ilfa's halacha, shvua koina, a totally different thing, in a totally different context. My shvua koina, you know what that means? It means like this, that sometimes you can have a fellow who is entrusted with an item, and he went through some sort of denial process, and he made a shvua to the owner, indicating that, you know, that he has no knowledge of this item or this, you know, of this claim. That shvua will give it to him. Listen to this. Kedrav Huna, Damar Rav Huna Marav, Manli Biyadcha. Ruben approaches Shimon. Look, where's my money that I gave you? Valo Aimer, he says, what are you talking about? Ein lecha biyadi, v'nishba. And he gets up and he makes a shvua, and soon we're going to learn that he made a shvua in Bezn. So he formally denied, he officially denied ever, you know, having been entrusted with the item, whether he never got it, whether, you know, he claims that it was lost. Following which, Edom show up and say, what are you talking? You have the money right there. Potter, this fellow no longer has to repay his owner. He doesn't have to repay this depositor. Why? Listen to this. Shenema v'lokach ba'ala v'lo yishalim. The pasuk there is speaking about a shomer who swears to defend his position, to exempt himself. V'lokach ba'ala. The owner will sort of take. What's he taking? He's not taking his money back. V'lokach ba'ala v'lo yishalim. Kiven shekiblu ba'alim shavua. Shavua is not just, you know, it's not just words. It's something that the owner imposes on the on the Shomer. He forces him to make that Shvua. And once the Shomer complies and submits himself to a Shvua, it's as though the owner got what he needed. He cashed in on his rights, so to speak. He got the Shvua. Right? He was assured of the story. He was basically provided, right, by the Shema with a Shvua to confirm the story, and that's it. So now the Shema no longer has to pay, even though in reality he was lying, and it's been discovered that the whole thing was an untruth. Right? The Edom came and testified as such. It's over. He already granted the owner what he needed, what he asked for. He gave him a Shvua. It's over. And that's all Ilfa meant. He's talking about this case where a fellow is going to make a Shvua, and that exempts him from further payment. Now comes the whole sugya to elaborate on this and explain exactly when and how and where is this concept applied. Only in very limited situations. Gufa amar v'huna amar rab. Let's go back to the halacha which we just learned. D'manali b'yadcha. Look, remember, I gave you $1,000,000 as a deposit. V'allah emer, ein lecha b'yad niklum. The other fellow totally denies. V'nishman, he swore as such. Bo Edom pata. Edom came and testified differently. He no longer has to pay. Shenemar. V'lokach ba'olah v'lo yishalem. As we learned, kivan shekibu balam ha'shvua. Since the owner received, so to speak, his shvua, he received that sort of assurance that came with a shvua. Shuv ein mishalem and mamin. The other fellow no longer has to pay. Amar Rav. Mistaber milsei the Rav b'mulva. It's probable. It's logical. That this chiddush of Rav to exempt a fellow just because he swore is specific bilmilva. When it's in discussion regarding a loan. I lent you the money. No, I never got the money. The leitza nitna. Because loan money is meant to be spent. It's never intact. As soon as I give him the $1,000,000, even if the money's right here, it's his to spend. So there, it's a matter of repayment. Tashlumen happens, right? So once he swears to me, that exempts him from Tashlumen, says Rashi. It says, V'lokach ba'olam v'lo yishalim. The Shvua is sort of in place. It substitutes for Tashlumen. Aval pikod and b'shusi demarikoy. But suppose it's just a simple deposit. You don't repay a deposit. You return the deposit. The concept of tashlumen is inapplicable to pikadon. Birshusi demarikoy, it's always in the possession, the hands, so to speak, of the owner, of the depositor. Right? As Rashi explains again, there's no point of repayment. Give it back to me. Return it to me. So this idea doesn't apply. You can swear from today till tomorrow, you still have to give me back my item. It exempts you from repayments. It exempts you from tashlumen. But not if you're holding on to my item, of course, then I get it back. But, and this is what Rava says, it's mistaver to make that distinction, but in the name of Hashem, meaning he, declared in a lashon of like a shvua, I promise you, truthfully, Rav actually applied this point even to a pikadon. Why the chiksev kra? Because actually this pasuk, which is the source of Rav's halacha, v'lokach b'ola v'lo yisham, guess what? The pikadon ksev, it's speaking about a pikadon. He also Rav Nachman. V'kamer l'hashmata. So Rachman was sitting and saying over the halacha, the name of Rav. Right? So if a person was nishba on a pikadon, he's kind of the pikadon. He doesn't have to return it. Esve Rav Acha v'amar yumi, he has to kashu l'Rav Nachman. So we have a Mishnah. Masechet Shavuos. Hecham pikdoini. Sir, where's my pikadon? Omar lies. He says, Avad, sorry, it got lost. I don't have it. Mashbiach ani. Okay, I'm imposing a shvua on you. V'amar, the other fellow responds, Amen. Yeah, I'm accepting the shvua. Turns out that he's lying. Edom come and testify that he himself ate, if it's the food or consumed the item. So what happens? Mishalim is hakeren. So he has to pay the actual principal, meaning the actual value for what he took. But there's no added, chaymesh, all that only happens in the next case. Hoidem me'atzmai. If the fellow turned around and admitted on his own, look, I'm sorry, Then it adds the other, you know, components as well. It triggers this triple process, Mishalem Keren, right? V'chaymesh, the added fifth, V'asham, and the carbon. So clearly, in the first halacha we see that even if the fellow made a shvua, and then it was followed by the testimony of the Edim, he'll have to pay. The shvua is not going to give him any rights. So firstly, we have to remember that, of course, Rav was only speaking in a case where Edim come and prove him wrong. But if he himself is Maida, of course, he still has to pay, even though he made a shvua. And Rashi points this out, because the pasuk speaks about a person returning an item, Ve'eshev Esakzela, after he was already Nishban, he was Maida. So there's no question that by a Maida, this whole doesn't apply. But in terms of obligating him in the formal system, through the formal channels of the Bezdin, by way of the Edim obligating him to pay, that doesn't work, because once he exempted himself with the Shvuah, it's over. Case closed. And here we see otherwise. Amar le Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman responded to him, let me answer your question. Hachamai Eskimen was speaking, you know, the reason why the Shvuah doesn't close the case, because the Nishpachus le-Bezdin. Sure, the Shemim made a Shvuah to the Bailim, but it was outside of Bezdin, so it's not a formal Shvuah, and therefore it doesn't have the same effect. It doesn't exempt him from payment. Amar Leisa, he responded, if that's the case, that we're speaking about an informal shua, Yach Emo Seifa, what about the next part of the Mishnah? Hecha Pikdani, where's my Pikdani? Amar Loi Nignav, he says, sorry, it was stolen. So here, instead of it was lost, it was stolen. Okay? Mashbiachani, okay, I'm making a shua with you, Amar Amen, and he receives the shua, he consents to it. Edom come along and say, well, you yourself, you're the ganav, you stole it. Misham tashlami kefil, that triggers a double payment, because he becomes like a regular ganav who pays kefil, right? But if he should admit on his own without the Edom, it triggers the triple process, mishalim keren, right? V'chemish v'ashim. Now, v'isak v'daitach. Chutz lebezen. So again, the shomer denied, right? He said it was stolen. The Edom came and proved him wrong. He has to pay kefil. Now, if the shvua occurred outside of Bezn, chutz lebezn, mi'ika kefil. Why would the shomer pay kefil? Right? The whole idea of the shomer having to pay kefil because he pretended the item was stolen and he himself turned out to be the ganav, that's only applicable when it was via an official Bezdin process, a court process, but if he swore outside of Bezdin, why would he have to pay kefil? So clearly, the Mishnah is speaking where the Shvuah occurs inside Bezdin. And if so, why in the first case, when he claimed that it was lost, and he swore to prove it, and it was proven a liar, why will he have to pay? According to Rav, Shvuah exempts you from payment. Armalis, he responds like this. You know, simply speaking, I could just answer you very simply. I have the option of answering that Reisha Chutz LeBezdin V'Seifa BeBezdin. The Mishnah is split into two cases. Part one was outside of Bezdin, and therefore the Shvuah doesn't really carry that same weight. Part B was in Bezdin. Shinui D'Chika, a forced, improbable solution, Loi Mishanina L'Cha, I don't want to propose that to you. Part A is there, part B is here. You know what? Either we do Bezdin. Perhaps both parts of the Mishnah are discussing a Shvua occurring inside of Bezdin. But there's still a difference. Levelekash, Kanba Kafatz. In part A of the Mishnah, where the Shvua doesn't have this, that same legal effect, is speaking where rather than the Bezdin imposing the Shvua on the Shomer, he jumped, just an expression, means he self-initiated the Shvua. That doesn't really carry such legal weight. Kamishalei kafatz, whereas part two of the Mishnah speaking like kafatz, it wasn't self-initiated, rather imposed by the Bezdin. So it was a formal, official shvua, which triggers, that appropriate consequence. Amalei Rami bar Chama Rav Nachman Avakash Michti. The Rav Lisvirlach. I know that you don't really conform to Rav's halacha that a shvua can substitute for repayment. You don't really hold to this whole thing. So why are you going to such great extent to defend Rav's opinion? You're trying to answer the Mishnayos and, fit it according to Rav. Mashkuni nafshach. Mashkun, you're you know, like a collateral. You're sort of sticking your neck out on the Rav to protect Rav's opinion. Lomalach, why are you doing that? Amalei says, well, it's Torah lefrusha the Rav. I'm just trying to explain Rav. The Rav hachimitars lemasnisim. Rav would, you know, explain the Mishnahs in this fashion. Okay, so perhaps personally I don't agree with it, but I still want to protect Rav's opinion and explain things accordingly. Asks the Gemara, v'harav k'ro ka'amar. Now, how could, you know, anybody disagree with Rav that the shomer is providing the shvua is as though he provided payment? It exempts him from further tashlumin. Rav's coming from a pasuk, v'harav k'ro ka'amar. Right? It says v'lokach ba'alav. The Baalim accepts the shvua v'lo yishal. That exempts the shomer from further liability. Right? Amri, so the answer is like this. We have a different application for that same pasuk. We have an alternate pshat. Kra l'chola nishbon shebeter is coming to tell you a general rule. Whenever a person makes a shvua in the context of a din Torah, nishbon v'lemishalman, typically it's to swear and exempt yourself from further payment. Hudas, that's what it's coming for. And that's learned from the pasuk, v'lakach ba'olav lo yishalim. Let him take my shvua, and that exempts me from payment. Indicative of the fact that the shvua is being presented by the fellow who should be paying. Here, take my shvua and exempt me from further payment. That's typically what a shvua is meant to accomplish, as opposed to the claimer coming and making a shvua to extract money. That's not, you know, the conventional shvua application. So bottom line, v'lokach bolav v'lo yishalim has two applications. Either to teach you that the payee is meant to be making the shvua, or according to Rav, once you make a shvua, you're potter from further payment. Here comes another kasha on Rav from another Mishnah. Masav Rav Amnuna, who was a Talmud of Rav. Okay, we have a Mishnah Masech HaShvois. Ishbiya alav chamisha pamim. Okay, where's my pikadim? I don't have it. He makes a shvua on Sunday, makes another shvua on Monday, Tuesday again, I don't have it, his promises. Wednesday, another oath. Bein b'fnei bezin. Ubein sheli b'fnei bezin, whether it was in the presence of the bezin, or whether or not, whether it was a formal, official shvua or not. V'kafar alav. And all five times, he denied this monetary claim. And then, of course, he turned around and admitted to all five. Chayv al klachas v'achas. So he's liable to each one, which basically means he has to bring a karban, etc., to address all five false oaths. Now, questions like this: why? Why is he chayiv per denial? Once he denied on Sunday, it's over. He's potter. So why would Monday's additional denial with additional shvua trigger another process of the chaymesh and the ashem? He's not really denying any monetary claim. It's no longer alive anymore. It's been sort of put into dormant state since yesterday's denial. There's no kfiras mamay, b'amar p'shimon, matam. You know why? Hoyel v'yachum, because theoretically, he can still reawaken that claim. Shimon, who denied on Sunday, can come around and say, "You know what? I'm sorry. It was a misspeak. I didn't. You know, I really owe you the money." And Monday's denial accomplishes a new denial, right? Matam hoyl v'yachal lachzor lahoydos. So theoretically, every additional denial really adds another layer of denial, because theoretically you could have admitted right now and reawakened the claim. Okay, now, v'acha kafas leibatzas amrus. So first of all, what do we see from here? That, yeah, even though he made a shvua, the claim is still, in some realm, it's still there, it's still active, it's still alive. Right, that's why we consider the subsequent denials as monetary denials, right? Hoy v'yachal achzal hoydes. Now, isn't this a kasha on Rav who says once you make a shvua, you're out, you're done, case closed? Now, v'achal kafas like matzas amrus. Here, you can't suggest that it wasn't a formal official shvuah, he just, you know, self-initiated it without the bezin imposing it on him, so it doesn't have the same value. You can't say that. Ishbiel of Ketani, it says that he imposed it on the fellow. It was imposed. Chutz le bezin lo matzis amrus, you can't suggest that it took place outside of bezin, so again, it doesn't have the same value. Bifnei bezin Ketani. Mishnah says it was in front of bezin. That's a kash. Kash amra. Rav Yirmiyah, who presented this question, Rav Amnun, who presented the kasha, he himself provided an answer. He's studying Ketani. You're right, the Mishnah is not speaking about one and the same case. It's sort of describing different scenarios, which in either case explains why the Shvuah doesn't have that same effect, because it's not really an official Shvuah. Ishbi'alav chutz lebezn. Either Ishbi'alav means outside of bezn, so it was externally imposed, but it was outside of bezin, so it's not an official shvuah. And the other part of the Mishnah, which describes the shvuah taking place in the bezin, uve bezin kafatz. He jumped out ahead and self-initiated it. So, in either case, we don't have both components. Imposed by bezin. It was either imposed, but not by bezin. It was either in bezin, but not imposed. That's why the shvuah does not exempt him. It doesn't lay the case to rest. It's still theoretically alive and active, in which case the subsequent shvois are considered shvois to deny a monetary claim. Says the Masiv Rava. Here comes another kash on Rav. This is a brisa. Balabayis shaton tanas ganav bepikodan. Okay, where's my cow that I entrusted you with? It was stolen. V'nishba b'hoida, he swore falsely and he admitted that he was just lying. Ubo Edom, the Edom came. And likewise, testified that this fellow himself stole the cow. So what's his status? Imach alo ubo Edom hoida, so we have an admission and a testimony, you know, by the way of the Edom. So what happened first? If the Haidah came before the Edom, so then it triggers that, you know, triple process, Mishalom, Keren, Bachay Mishvashim. But if the Haidah only came after the Edom, they came first, Mishalom, Tashnumei, Kefal, Vashem. He pays double because he was caught red-handed. He turns into the Ganav because he was established as a Ganav by the Edom. And he pays an Asham because of his self-admission that followed the Edom. Now, the question is like this. Once he made the shvua, the initial shvua, how can we obligate him any further? I thought a shvua puts things to rest. You can't apply any of the other, you know, elements of chutz lebezdin or kafatz. Why kefal ketani? The Braisa refers to kefal, which is a payment that only happens due to a formal, you know, in bezdin shvua. So once that happened, how could you even impose any payments on him? According to Rav, Shvua ends the story. Elam Rav, we have to remember something very important. Rav's halach does not apply to a toyein tanas ganav, to a shomer, who alleged robbery, and he himself is the robber. Elam Rav kalhoida. If, first of all, you should know like this. Kol hoida, if the shomer turns around and admits his guilt, lo yishna toyin tanas avad, v'lo yishna toyin tanas ganav, lo yamarav. Irrespective of whether he had initially claimed that it was lost or stolen, but now he's coming around admitting, of course, he's fully liable. Doksivis vada, the boish no mikaren v'chaimish. Pasuk speaks about this very fellow who swore falsely and came around and admitted to be Svad, he's got to go through the whole system. Karen B'chemesh, right? Likewise, says Rav, you should know, Toyin Tanas Ganav, if the Shemher initially pretended it was stolen from him, Ubo Edom, and Edom came and told us that he stole it, here as well, Rav doesn't apply his halacha nami, Loyama Rav, Doksiv Tashlomei Kefal, the Pasuk speaks about this very case. A Toyin Tanas Ganav pays Kefal. Rav's Chiddush, that Shvua puts the case, lays the case to rest, is only in a very specific case. Where's my cow? got lost. He swore. He never admitted. As such, Ubo Edom. Now, Edom come and try to obligate. Here comes Rav and says, hold it. You're trying to criminalize him through the formal official channels? Hold it. He's done with that. You made a shmua. V'lokach ba'alav le'yishalom. Case is closed. Court session is over. Okay, so let's just recap. V'lokach ba'alav le'yishalom. Take the shmua and leave him alone. That's Rav's chiddush, but only in one very specific case. Such as, where's my cow? Sorry, I never got it, or it was lost. Shvua, yeah. He walks away. Edom come and try to prove him wrong. It's too late. Case closed. Court session is over. I already got his shvua. That's instead of payment. But in any other case, such as if he himself turns around and admits guilt, or in a case where he claimed ganav and it turns out that he's the ganav, then all agree, irrespective of whether he swore or not, we trigger the process and he's fully chayev. Also Rav Gamda. So Rav Gamda went along. V'amr l'shmato kamei the Rav Ashi. He presented this distinction of Rava, when yeah, when not, right, to Rav Ashi. Amr le, so Rav Ashi wasn't pleased. He says, so you mean to say that if the shomer admits guilt, then even though it was post Shavua, he'll still have to pay? Is that what you're saying? Amar le'ashto, ma Rav Hamnuna. Let's go back two steps. Rav Hamnuna was the one who asked the kasha from the fellow who swore Sunday, Monday, remember, five times in a row. And Rav Hamnuna was a Talmud of Rav. Uma Rav Hamnuna Talmud of the Rav. V'yadu dam of Rav. Hoida. Rav Hamnuna, who was a Talmud of Rav. And apparently, the fact that he asked from that Mishnah, what was the kasha from that mission? He swore once on Sunday, and then on Monday, then on Tuesday. Each one is a separate liability. Why? Mishnah explained, because theoretically, the claim is still theoretically alive. How could it be alive? If, you know, should he admit at this point that he swore falsely yesterday, so theoretically the claim can still be there, in which case today's denial is a fresh new denial. So clearly you're telling me. One second. So that was the kasha. But 1 second. It's not a monetary denial, because once he made his shvua, it's over. That was Rav Hamnuna's kasha. Again, how could you, Rav, say that once you make his shvua, it's over? The Mishnah indicates otherwise. Even though it's post shvua, the claim is still very much alive, because it can be maida, right? So Rav Hamnuna asked the kasha. The kamois of hoida. He asked from that case of the Mishnah, where we treat the new denial as a fresh new denial. It's considered a kfiras mamain because of the fact that he could be maida and undo yesterday's shvua. And he considered that to be a kasha on Rav. What do you mean shvua? Shvua, it's close case. So apparently, Rav Hamnuna understood that Rav's principle, Rav's concept, that Shavua closes the case, is even in the case of Haidah, meaning it preempts any further liabilities, even if the person himself should come forth and admit. That's how Rav Hamnuna apparently understood Rav, and that's why he asked from that Mishnah. Well, in that Mishnah we see otherwise, that even after the shvua, you can be made. Va'at amras hoydalo. Now you're telling me, you, Rava, telling me, Rav Gamda, the name of Rava, that Rav's idea does not apply to a moide. If he makes a shvua and then he comes around and admits, even Rav agrees he has to pay. Rav Hamnuna did not understand Rav in this manner, otherwise he wouldn't have asked his kasha, because that mission is speaking about hoydah. Totally different story. But Amr's Hoyda Loy. Amr Loy Marav. Rav doesn't apply his halacha to Hoydo. Amr li Rav Acha Saba Rav Ashi. So Rav Acha Saba responded to Rav Ashi. No. That's not a kash. Truthfully, Rav's halacha does not apply to Moida. Meaning, if he makes a shvua and then he admits, of course he has to pay. Rav is only saying that you can't trigger a new liability in the Bezdin, the official channels to the Edom, because the official channels are closed. Once the fellow made a shua, closed case. But if he himself self-admits, of course he's chayiv. It's not like he actually paid the money, right? But nevertheless, Rav Amnuna had a valid point. He knew that in a case of self-admission, Rav would not apply his halacha. But he still had a kasha on the Mishnah with the multiple, you know, shvois. And it goes like this. I understand that even after Sunday's shvua, he can still be moida. That's true. But that's not sufficient reason for us to consider this second shvua a shvua to deny, to officially deny a monetary claim, because the official monetary claim has already been rendered dormant through Sunday shvua. Look, theoretically, if Edom come today and prove him wrong, does he have to pay? Well, according to Rav, not. So then, that's it. In the official context of this formal court case, it's over. There's no more claim to speak of. So Monday's shvua should not increase his liability. You're right. If he himself decides to self-admit, of course he has to pay. But he was speaking about official channels. He was speaking about Bezdin considering this claim to be alive. It's no longer alive. In terms of Bezdin, they don't relate to this claim anymore once he made a shvua. If Rav's concept is true, that shvua closes the case. That's all he meant to ask. So again, you're right. Technically, if he's moida on Monday, that Sunday was a false shvua, of course he'll have to pay. Rav agrees if he's moida, of course he comes forward and he pays. But he was speaking about official channels. Officially, this case is closed. This claim has been laid to rest due to yesterday's shvua. If Edom will come today and try to impose payment, of course he wouldn't have to pay. So then, how could you consider Monday's or Tuesday, or Wednesday's oath a shvua on Kfiras Mamad? There is no longer a monetary claim against him. That's the essence of Rav Amnuna's kasha. That's a valid point. Okay, let's just see the words inside. Yamris b'shleim nishba ki yosu edim mechayev. It's all good and well without Rav. The Mishnah would work well without Rav if you would say that even after a shvua, edim come, you have to pay. That explains the Mishnah. Amot l'hocha, that's why mechavinim l'karban ha-shvua v'asraisa. So we trigger the karban, meaning he's liable to all the ramifications of the second shvua, Monday shvua, which comes after Sunday shvua, because the claim is still active, it's still alive. Because technically you can admit and reactivate the claim, because again, officially the claim is still here. In fact, if Edom would come, he would have to pay. That explains why Monday's shvua is considered a shvua pertaining to a monetary claim. Eli Amruski also Edom Pata, but according to Rav, that after Sunday's denial and shvua, Edom can no longer obligate him. It's over. Case is closed. In the official records, there's no mention of his case anymore. How could it be a case that Ilu Asisadi Masadi be Pata? If Edom would come today and try to obligate him and prove him wrong, he wouldn't have to pay. We're going to go and apply a carbon because he made another shvua. Shvua on what? On thin air. There's no more claim against him. Holy because theoretically he can, if he wants, re-trigger the liability by admitting. Bottom line is, did he admit? No. So practically, there's no claim against him. He didn't admit, nor can we even impose obligation on him through the Edom. So it's over. His denial is a non-denial. It's shvua, it's a non-shvua. There's no monetary claim against him. That was the kasha on Rav. And then we had to answer what we said before, that we're speaking that the shvua was not an official shvua. It was outside Bezdin, etc. Okay, so bottom line is like this. V'lokach ba'olav lo yishalim. Take the shvua and leave him alone. That's Rav's interpretation. And it's only a very specific case. First of all, if the shomer claimed they never had the item or lost the item, that's number one. Number two, it was followed by a shvua, and an official shvua in the Bezdin, imposed by the Bezdin, and then followed by Edom. So once you have this whole package, we say he's potter. But if he himself admits, or it's a Toyin Tanas Ganav, which means that the Shimon, instead of alleging that it was lost, alleges that it was stolen, and turns out he himself stole it. So even if he made a shvuah in the Beis Din, once Edom show up and claim that he stole, he turns into the ganav and he pays kefil. Here comes the next gemara. Amar Rav Chiya Ba'Aba Rabbi Yochanan. Hatoyin Tanas ganav v'pikad. That's our case. He claims the item was stolen. It's been discovered that he stole it. Mishal Tashlam kefil. He pays double like any other ganav. Furthermore, here's the chiddush. Tavachum Machar. Let's say he did the shechita on this animal that he stole or he sold it. That triggers the arba v'chamisha payment 4 or 5 times as much. Mishal Tashlam arba v'chamisha. Why? Hoyel. We treat him like a regular ganav. Hoyel v'ganav misham tashlum kefil. Just like any other thief pays double. V'tayin tanas ganav. And this pretend ganav also pays kefil. Misham tashlum kefil, as we've just established. So furthermore, ma ganav shum misham kefil. Just like a standard ganav who pays double. But if he's tavach hamacha, what happens? He pays 4 or 5 times as much. Misham tashlum v'chamisha. Aftayin tanas ganav v'gan. Likewise, a shomer who turns into a ganav, kishu mashalim tashlum kefil, tavachamachar mashalim also tashlum bar b'chamish. Asks the Gemara, how can you compare the two things? You're sort of learning one from the other, but mal ganav shekem mashalim tashlum kefil shlo b'shvua. A regular ganav has an advantage, so to speak. The person steals and he's caught red-handed, he pays double, even without him making a shvua to defend himself. You don't need that shvua element involved. Toimer b'toim tam is ganav, as opposed to a shomer turned ganav. The only way he pays kefil is if he made a shvua to defend himself, right? Elo b'shvua. So perhaps he's at a disadvantage, and you can't really learn him from the regular ganav pertaining to the other halachos of arba v'chamisha. So how can you make that equation? Amri, the answer is hekesha huhi. It's a hekesh. The psukim are situated next to each other. The regular ganav and this shomer transformed into a ganav. Ve'ed mashivan al hekesha halachos. We don't challenge the hekesh. We connect them fully, and we apply all the halachas to the Toyin Tanas Ganav. Now, Hanich Leman Da'omer, that's only according to the Shita that learns the Psukim like that. Chad Beganav, one Pasuk there is about a Ganav, V'chaim B'Toyin Tanas Ganav, the other Pasuk is about a Toyin Tanas Ganav. Shabbat, so we see a clear connection, a clear equation. El Leman Da'omer, according to the other opinion, which we had back in Daf Samach Gimel. Hai Yimietz Ganav. So the part of the Pasuk which speaks about the Ganav being discovered, Vim Layamatza, the part of the Pasuk speaks about not being discovered, they're both speaking about a Toyin Tanas Ganav. A Shomer returns into a Ganav. Tarvayu B'Toyin Tanas Ganav. So there's no mention there about a regular Ganav, Michael Amaris. Then you don't have this equation anymore. You can't connect it to. Amri, the answer is, it says, Ha Ganav, right? Extra Hey, Ganav. Ha Ganav tells you, oh, this Shomer, who's really Ganav, is a true Ganav. With all the trimmings. He's a regular ganav. We treat him as such with respect to kefil and dalad vehe. Eis vehe comes a kasha. Eis v'rachi ba'abo l'rabi yechna. A toyin tanas ganav pays 4 or 5 if he does the shechita, if he does the mechira. Hey, chan shari, we have a mishnah. Where's my ox? Nignav, he says, sorry, stole, mashbi yechani, I'm posing a shvu on you. V'amar amin, he says, sure. V'edim v'idin oisoy, sh'achli, edim v'idim oisoy, they testify, and he himself ate the animal. That's a Toyin Tanas Ganav. Mishal Tashlum Kefil, so he pays double. Why only double? He shechted, right? He's eating the animal. Apparently he shechted, we're assuming. He stole, but he's careful with the kashrus, right? V'acha, do you have to look kazayis basa with shechita? How do you get a kazayis, a flesh, of edible basa without shechita? So he did the shechita. Why is he only paying kefil? Uktani Mishal Tashlum Kefil. Tashlum kefil in only double, but not the, you know, tashlum dalad v'heloi. That's a kasha of Yechon, who says that a ganav and a Toyin Tanas ganav are treated equally. Hach of my skin, says the Gemara, we're going to find all kinds of situations where there is no tvicha, kigoyin she'achle nevel. He ate the animal as a dead animal, meaning he didn't do shechita. Why do we have to resort to a nevela? It could have been an animal that's a trefa, meaning had a, you know, an internal wound, a critical wound, and then he did the shechita on that. And since that shechita does not really produce proper results, it doesn't really enable the animal la'achila, so it's not really called a proper shechita. And that would be the chiddush of the Mishnah. That's not considered a shechita. There's no dalad v'hei. Why don't we speak about that? And says the Gemara, Kerab Meir. We're assuming the Mishnah is like Kerab Meir. Rabbi Yechon holds like Rabbi Meir. Even though it's a shechita which doesn't really produce desired results, it doesn't really enable the flesh la'achila. Shema shechita, it's treated like a regular shechita. halachically is regarded as a maser shechita, in which case it would trigger dalat vehei, and therefore he said it's an avela without shechita. Why speak about a fellow who ate something non-kosher? I'll find you a case where he ate the basar without shechita, and it was permissible. Ben pekua, an animal found inside the mother's stomach. So the shechita of the mother permits the offspring as well. So it's permissible without shechita. Because he's gone like Rabbi Meir, the Amar, ben pekua ton shechita. A fully developed fetus needs shechita even though the mother was shechted, so there's no permissibility without shechita. Asks the Gemara, why can we have a very simple case where the Tanyan Tanas Ganav did Shechita and he's still exempt from Dalad Behe? Lishanadli, why can't he answer like this? The Ganav was caught red-handed and the Bezdin issued their ruling, go ahead and pay the, you know, pay back the owner. It's a pretty, you know, official conclusion. Go ahead and pay him. And what happens then? The Amar Rabba tells us a chiddush. The Bezdin issued this absolute verdict. Say Tain, like, go pay him. At this point, if the Shomer proceeded, instead of returning the ox, rather to the Sheikhet, to Shechtet, Tavach HaMachar, Pater. You know why? My time. Given the Paschal and Nosei, once the Bezdin, the court, issued their absolute verdict, here, go return the animal. But Tavach HaMachar, he went, instead he did the Shechita, Habi Gazlam. That turns him from a ganav, a clandestine, you know, a thief, to a gazlan, an outright robber. Right? Because he's actually taking that animal that the Bezdin instructed that he returned to the owner, and he's defying their instructions and doing a shechit, that's a gazlan. The gazlan le mishalem tashlum bar chamish is no din of. That's because they said say tamely. It was a, you know, pretty clear cut conclusion. Go give it back. But let's say they would have told him chayiv atalitin le. That's, you know, it's a notch lower. You chayiv. So there, they didn't really, you know, conclude 100% that you have to actually give it back to him. You're obligated. It's still sort of like, you know, not concluded 100%. So here he still maintains his title, his status as a ganav, his earlier status. The ganav went and did tvicha mechira on the animal. Now he has to pay the alav. Hey, why? My time. Because until they actually paskin that he has to return the animal, akati ganavu, he still retains his earlier status as a ganav, status unchanged, and therefore when he does a tvicha, he pays the alav. Hey. So that's a simple solution to this kasha. Yehuda Rabbi Yechon says that a Tanya Tanas Ganav pays kefil, or if he does shechita, he pays dalav hay. So why over here wasn't he paying dalav hay? The answer is because he turned into a gazlan. Simple. Why do we have to speak about a fellow eating a vela, which is not kosher? Amrish, the response was like this. We tamech according to you. I have another terrorist, another possibility. Lishanali, he could have answered b'shut of shetavach. I have another case where a shomer, a ganav, did shechita, and he stole potter from dalat vehei. Let's say the animal was stolen by two partners in crime, and one proceeded to do shechita on the animal without his partner's consent. That's called like a ganav achar a ganav. He's stealing from a ganav, his partner who's a ganav. So in this case, Rashi brings Gemara and Daf Ayin Ches speaks about it. If you do tvicha at this point, there's no dalat vehei. That's another case where the ganav could have done a valid kosher shechita and still be potter. So that's another option. Why didn't he mention that? Ella, you know, he didn't go through the whole list. Chadam mitreyot losanak. He picked one of two or three possibilities, and of course, all these are valid and working options. Ve'amar abchir barabam v'yechanan. So we have the first halacha from Rabbi Yechanan. Toyin tanas ganav pays kefil or dalveh. Here comes another halacha. Hatoyin tanas ganav ba'aveda. A slightly different variation of the previous halacha. He found something. He found a lost item. He claimed not to have it. It was stolen from him. Turns out that he stole it himself. Mishalem, right? It triggers the same process. Mishalem, Tashlame, Kefil, my time. You know why? Dechsiv. Because in that, those psukim, we also mention a fellow who found an Aveda. I'll call Aveda. Asher Yomar. He denies it. He has to pay the Kefil. Eisvir Rab Abba Bamamul Rab Chibra Abba. I have a kashya. Ki tenish. Pasuk says, if a man entrusted his friend with an item, right, then he comes around to collect it, fellow denies it, etc., etc. Ein nesinas katan klum. Loch is, if a katan, a minor, deposited this item, he cannot trigger the process, he can't impose yeshua, and etc., etc., there's no kefil. Ve'en li'el shanasli kshu katan. Perhaps that only applies when the katan was the one who gave it. Ve'tavash kshu katan, and he came to claim it when he was a katan. He's still a katan, so he can't trigger the process. But let's say nesana kshu katan. True. He gave it to the person as a katan. But Tavik Yeshu Gadol, by the time he came around to collect it, he was already an adult. Menayin, what about that case? How do we know that the Yishayimer is potter and it doesn't trigger the whole process? Tamaloyma Ado Lekim Yavid Vashneyam. Pasuk begins with the fellow entrusting the item and it takes him all the way to the Bezdin, right? In the same pasuk, you have both sides of the story, from the giving, from the deposit till the actual litigation. So we see it's all one continuous process. Achtehi nesino tviyoshav and keecha, the nesino, the depositing, and the claim in the bezin has to all be under the same circumstances, has to be all be given by dealing with a gadol, full adults. Now, v'im isa, if it's true and correct that this process of tointan as ganav can be triggered even by an aveda, a fellow who found a lost item without involving a depositor, right? The mere fact that he's in possession of the other fellow's item, that is sufficient to trigger this whole process of liability. So why is a katan any worse? Fine, he gave it to me as a katan, but now I have his car. It's worse than finding an aveda in the street. So now he's a gadol. He's challenging me. Forget about the fact that he gave it to me as a katan. Skip that whole part of the story. The fact is, I am in possession of his car. Be it because he gave it to me, be it because I found it. It's the object that triggers the liability. V'im isa, if it's true, to have an amik aveda, let it be like an aveda. Amalei, he responded like this. You're right. If he would still have it, then we can treat it like no worse than aveda. But that was he consumed it while the depositor was still a katan. It's no longer here. By the time he became a gadol, there's nothing to speak of. There's no item around. Says the Gemara, okay, avok shu gadol mai. But let's say he would still be in possession of the item when the fellow turned an adult, and then, you know, he went and consumed it, then he went and ate it. My, what would happen then? So it would trigger that whole kefil process. Because as we said, it's no worse than an aveda. Is that true? If that's the case, at the tana. So when the Bryce is looking for liability, why does it say, Acha tehei nesino tviyoshav and keecha? The only way it works is because is where the depositor and the claimer are adults. Listen, it should say like this. You don't need the fellow to be an adult at the time of the deposit. That's irrelevant. All you need is that the owner who's claiming should be an adult today. And the achila should also be when he's an adult, meaning that the shemer consumed it while the claimer was already an adult. That's all you need. Skip what happened during the Nesina. Who cares how old he was when he gave me the item? As long as I consumed it while he's an adult. So he has a full valid adult claim against me. It's no worse than an Aveda, right? Amrleis, he says, you're right. Tzni, we can revise the Braisa. Skip the Nesina. Acha dehei achila utviya shavim keachal. As long as he's an adult during the Tviya and during the achila, that's sufficient to trigger this whole process of Toyin Tanas Ganav. Rav Ashi disagrees. Loidami, you can't compare finding a lost item and denying its existence to denying the existence of a deposit by a katan. Aveda ka'asim mikoich ben das. The fact is, when I found a basketball, who lost it? A ben das, an adult. So he's sort of triggering my responsibilities, my liabilities. Even though he's not cognizant of the fact that he has no idea that I found it, but the fact is he's the owner, and that triggers my liabilities. As opposed to an item deposited by a katan. True. Today he's an adult, and today I'm in possession of his item, but it's worse than just finding a lost item owner unidentified, owner unknown. Because over there, wherever the owner is, he's a ben das. And that triggers my liability. But here, what triggered my liability? The desina, the pikadon, the deposit, which took place when he was a katan. So the process was not initiated properly. So here in this case, it will not set in motion the process of Toyin Tanis Kalev. Okay, let's just summarize. We have basically two parts of today's daf, Amud Aleph and Amud Beis. And Amud Aleph, we have Rav's Chiddush, right? We have a pasuk, V'lokach ba'olav le'yishalem, right? So according to our interpretation, it just means to say that, you know, who makes a shvur? The person who's meant to pay. So shvur exempts from payment. According to Rav, it takes it a step further. In certain situations, providing a shvur is in lieu of payment. And we specify that it only applies in one specific case. Where is my stuff? It's lost. I never got it. And he makes a shvur. And Adam come and try to impose liability. He's done. Case closed. Once he made the shvur. But in other situations, such as Tanya Tanas Ganav, where is my thing? Oh, it was stolen. It turns out that he stole it. So even if he made a shvur, doesn't matter. That's what the pasuk speaks of. He pays the kefil. I'm going to Rabbi Yechim. That's the Yamad Beis Sugya. It takes him to kefil. And theoretically, even to Dal Behe, should he do Ktvicha Mechira? And the Gemara concludes that even applies to a Tanya Tanas Ganav. But regarding a katam, we have a difference of opinion. All the best to you and Hatzlacha Rabbah.